From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Stockton, California.
Selma.
Rockridge.
Tracy, California.
Noe Valley.
Everywhere, I'm homeless.
Coming up, a full episode on Central American migrant youth in the Bay Area. We'll hear from young people fleeing extreme violence in their homelands.
What I live in El Salvador, it was horrible.
Then we'll hear how one East Oakland high school adapted to hundreds of new arrivals.
There was no way to predict this wave of young people who knew that this many kids would leave El Salvador and Guatemala.
And we'll dive into the debate over what the city of Oakland's responsibility should be.
But what about the children in Oakland? You are not spending one copper penny on those children.
Seeking asylum in Oakland. Today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. We're doing something a little different today. We're devoting the whole show to a special report on unaccompanied migrant youth living in Oakland. Maybe you remember the influx of Central American children crossing the border alone back in 2014.
52,000, that's how many unaccompanied children the Department of Homeland Security says have crossed into the United States just since October.
Tens of thousands have entered illegally this year, and more are coming every day.
Their parents need to know that this is an incredibly dangerous situation, and it is unlikely that their children will be able to stay.
Though the media attention has died down, the migration has not. Today, unaccompanied minors continue to arrive in the Bay Area, and their journeys aren't necessarily over once they get here. KLW's Liza Veal and Hannah Kingsley Ma teamed up to bring us this story. And just a quick note, we'll be using pseudonyms for some of the young people out of concern for their safety.
Meet Sylvia. She's 19 years old. She just finished her junior year at Oakland International High.
And she's lived through more than most people can imagine.
Yeah, in Guatemala, where I live, no police, nothing. That's why I feel unsafe there.
She says there was no police. She felt unsafe.
The drug trade's culture of violence has reshaped day-to-day life in a lot of Central America. There's little protection outside of gangs. So Sylvia says there was no one to keep her safe when a man with a knife started following her on her way to wash her clothes in the river.
They followed me, and then he put the knife under my neck like three times.
Where Sylvia's from, it's become routine for girls to be forced into marriage or sex. Her only escape at 16 was to leave home.
For boys, it's a little different. The choice is often join a gang or run. Jaime is almost 19, from El Salvador.
And did you know other people that joined the gangs?
Yeah, a lot of people. Like half of teenagers of my community are in there now.
Jaime says his grandma and his faith were the reasons he resisted the gangs. Violence was everywhere. He says he saw someone murdered right in front of him.
I see one man shooting the back of other men with a gun. And that was hard because I have never seen that before.
So, like Sylvia, he fled. They each left their families, their homes, and headed out alone, joining the migrant trail up through Mexico.
I said, I don't want to live here anymore. My family, they stay in my home country. It was sad. I feel scared, and then I feel what happened to my life, I said.
Thousands of people make the harrowing journey each year. One of the young men we spoke to went 2 days while walking in the desert without food or water. He told us that migrants are often extorted and abused by immigration officers in Mexico, and kidnapped by the drug cartels who control the checkpoints.
When they finally make it to the U.S. border, many migrants don't know what to expect. For unaccompanied minors, the process goes roughly like this. They're held by immigration police in something like a jail until a family member or a friend, or maybe a friend of a friend, agrees to take them in. That person's address is how immigration keeps track of minors.
Before being released, minors are given a court date. In court, they have to make a case for why they should be able to stay. It's not easy. Even though they're fleeing something that feels like a war, they're not technically designated as refugees. So to get asylum, they need to prove that they are being targeted personally. This often means recounting the worst things that have ever happened to them for a room full of strangers.
They took me there for 3 hours and a half, talking about my life in El Salvador. That was pretty hard because what I live in El Salvador, it was horrible.
Jaime and Sylvia both got lucky. They were connected with free legal representation here in Oakland, and they were able to win their asylum cases and stay.
It's a relief, and it's devastating, because it's final.
Like, because if I get the asylum, I cannot go back to El Salvador.
Did you think about going back?
Yeah, because my grandma is there.
And Sylvia, her abuela, is also the one she misses most.
She was the best person for me, and then she cared of me. And then when I had problems, she gave me some advice. I don't know, I miss she a lot.
The drug wars raging in Central America and Mexico might feel far away for some people, but this global crisis is having a huge impact right here in the Bay Area.
The long-standing Central American community in Oakland means that city in particular has taken in a lot of these migrants. The public school district serves a big population of Central American newcomers, kids who came to the U.S. within the last 3 years. And the latest count says 570 of them came as unaccompanied minors, like Sylvia and Jaime. Only a lot of them don't have asylum.
Newcomers don't just get thrown into the classroom with everyone else. Oakland has created special programs for them in 4 of its high schools. But because kids show up to enroll throughout the year, schools are having to scramble to keep up.
Or not like?
Castlemont High in East Oakland is one of those schools.
Castlemont is in one of the most disadvantaged neighborhoods in East Oakland. It's also where a lot of newcomers live now. So the school has stepped up to take them in. Especially teachers like Carrie Haslinger, whose classes are now devoted entirely to newcomers.
There was no way to predict this wave of young people who knew that this many kids would leave El Salvador and Guatemala.
On top of a full English and ethnic studies teaching load, Haslinger took the lead on creating a program for the newcomers, and she had to do it in a hurry.
The district had expected 100 newcomers to enroll by the end of the school year, but new kids were showing up at the school every single day. They started turning storage rooms into classrooms, putting up dividers to split one room into two.
So we hired 6 new teachers and started interviewing in December, had them hired by January. And since January, we have enrolled 100 more students.
She's saying they gained 200 new students in the span of 6 months. That's twice as many as they were expecting to get, with the school year not even over.
And a lot of them only speak an indigenous Mayan language called Mam. So Haslinger and the other newcomer teachers started strategizing how to teach English to them with only a few student translators.
They were also coming up against how traumatized these kids often are and trying to teach in a way that addresses these painful memories.
So this is interesting. I said, let's do vocabulary about where you're from.
Haslinger wants them to process rather than hide their pasts. So she asked them for words.
Houses, flowers, people, apples, cars, deaths, violence, gang, poverty, buildings, parks, volcano, beach, ocean, waterfalls, drugs, alcohol, trash, abandoned, light, drunks, smoke, weed, chicken, meat, beef, beans, burning. And so it's this really varied list of their absolute reality.
Haslinger's work in the classroom is just one part of her job now. She says education is only possible for these students once a baseline of other needs have been met. So she works closely with school district staff to deal with things like,
who has a lawyer? Who has seen a doctor? Who needs to see a dentist? Do you want to see a therapist? Do you want to participate in after-school programs? Making sure those referrals are written.
But for some unaccompanied migrant youth, education feels like a luxury they just can't afford.
No he podido ir a la escuela porque por motivo del trabajo.
Like this boy, Alberto. He's 18.
Para poder apoyar a mis hermanos que tengo allá en mi país de Guatemala.
Alberto came here to Oakland from Guatemala by himself in 2014. He says he's the sole breadwinner for his younger brothers and sisters back home.
He says he can't go to school because he has to work. He has two jobs. Most days, he leaves at 5:30 in the morning to paint houses in the South Bay.
Haslinger and other adults want kids like Alberto to know you can make more money with a high school diploma than without one. They're also trying to make school more useful for kids by offering classes that are career-oriented.
But that's a long way from being helpful for Alberto, who's just entirely outside the school system.
Pasar los días aquí muy triste. Estoy aquí solo, pues únicamente estoy trabajando día a día.
He says he's sad every day. He feels totally alone, just working day to day.
Escucho a mis hermanos allá llorar y no sé, es algo muy difícil para mí.
He hears his siblings cry for him on the phone and he can't do anything about it. Until he's granted permanent residency, he can't travel to go see them.
No sé, he sentido un gran vacío acá.
Jaime, who you heard from earlier, also felt pressure to drop out. But he manages by working on the weekends and after school, and with the support of some family members.
Back in El Salvador, Jaime couldn't be a good student. He missed half his classes working in the fields and then avoiding the gangs. But here, Jaime has new opportunities.
Because I want to be the first person who have a degree from in my family. I want to be the orgullo de mi familia.
He says he wants to be the pride of his family.
He already has a plan, community college, then a transfer to SF State for a degree in engineering. He says the first thing he noticed when he got to Oakland was the tall, tall buildings.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. You're listening to a special report from KALW's Liza Veal and Hannah Kingsley Ma about unaccompanied minors from Central America now living in Oakland. We've heard how teachers and staff hurried to build a program for these newcomers, making links from the classroom to other social services. Now, Liza and Hannah take us back inside Castlemont High to hear how other kids at the school dealt with the influx of new students.
Newcomers have been enrolling at Castlemont since the beginning of the year, and not all the existing students were exactly welcoming. Teacher Carrie Haslinger says the newcomers get a lot of resources, like free school supplies.
And then the mainstream Oakland kids, also marginalized, disenfranchised population, are like, why are they getting all this stuff, you know, and right. Feeling like sort of an anger.
And so the newcomers became targets for bullying. Teachers like Ms. Haslinger or Ms. Hass tried to curb the problem by explaining why newcomers were here.
Over in the computer lab, some students bring this up.
I mean, Ms. Hass just told me like all the stuff that they went through, like how they used to like live and they had to get away from their parents. Some people had to leave their parents out there.
They basically were trying to get away from violence. And if you bullying them, you just showing them like, maybe I need to get away from here too.
Dominique Smith and Sauna Roy are juniors at Castlemont. They say the newcomers get picked on for the usual high school stuff, like their clothes.
And the way they dress.
The stuff that they wear is not like what like people would, yeah. They'd be like, what are those?
They make fun of their shoes. What are those, they say.
Dominique and Sana say the newcomers just act different. They show a lot of enthusiasm.
No lie, though, at the bus stop across the street, when it's time to get on the bus, like, they will run you down, like, oh, no, like, they be too close, like, can I get some space?
And then in the lunchroom, they be all packed up in the lunch like, line, like.
Run to get lunch, like, they finna bite it down.
I be like, it's good. I ain't even hungry no more.
Bullying got so bad at Castlemont that some newcomers were skipping school to avoid the problem. But in the past year, things have really changed. And Ms. Hass says a lot of that is because of student allies.
The biggest advocates for the newcomers have been kids who came here when they were children.
Like this one group of boys that took it upon themselves to defend the newcomers.
Us four, we're known around the school and we have a good reputation in this school.
That's senior Ismael Hernandez. He and his three friends saw what was happening and they intervened.
The word got around that newcomers were getting bullied and people didn't like that. And what we didn't like that.
First, they said they tried reasoning with the students that were doing the most bullying. Some sophomores, Latino like them. Here's another one of the four, Ray Ramirez.
You know, we would just tell them sometimes, like, straight up, like, guys, like, you shouldn't guys do this. You're making them feel, like, suicidal, depressed, making them want to leave the school.
And then they came to the newcomers with advice for how to avoid getting targeted.
We basically gave them a little, like, workshop one day, an advisory about that.
A workshop about what they were doing to provoke the other students.
Yeah, the newcomers are really playful, so they like running a lot around, like, and I don't blame them. You know, they got their freedom here because maybe back home they didn't have that freedom and that enjoyment. So we talked to them. We're like, oh, guys, it's okay to have fun. Maybe at lunch, you know, maybe not during passing periods. You shouldn't be running around the hallways because here people care a lot about their shoes and maybe you might step on them and they might get mad and start problems. You also shouldn't be looking at them for so long because people here take it as offense, as like you're trying to start something with them.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but this is how the streets roll.
Despite this intervention, races the main bullies involved kept at it.
And now the beef was between them and the bullies.
And so I just got to the point where one day they just decided to come up to one of us and supposedly trying to start stuff, and it ended up bad for them.
As in, they fought.
Yeah, we admit that it got physical, but we do not enforce violence, you know? We don't enforce violence, we don't like violence, but it got to the point where we were tired and irritated.
But Ray and Ismael say talking with the bullies has actually been more effective than fighting. They think other students are catching on, that the newcomers bring something special to the school.
Right now, like every lunch, we always play soccer with them. I mean, they're pretty cool, and they're like, if you get to know them, they're pretty cool.
Both Ray and Ismael got made fun of when they first came from Mexico as younger kids. Oakland is their home now, and they rep it. But the newcomers remind them of their past.
Like, it reminds me of, like, where I'm from, or how they act. It's funny. I remember how I used to act like that, and I did change. It just reminds me both ways.
Ms. Haas says the school has depended on its Spanish-speaking students to help get newcomers adjusted. One student, Abril, helps translate Haslinger's classes. Abril came to the U.S. when she was little. She says the newcomers look to her as an example of what their lives might become.
I guess they see themselves in the future once they talk to me. I can be here for long too. Like, if she learned English and like she's helping us, like maybe in the future I'll be doing the same thing.
She says the newcomers are ambitious about school and learning English.
They're like so competitive, but I like that. They're like, oh, I bet you didn't know this, when I was like, okay, chill.
According to Abril, the backlash to the bullying has been stronger than the bullying itself.
We stand up for them. Like, yeah, we all come together. I guess it's united us more.
Maybe you're thinking she means it's united the Latino students at Castlemont, but no.
Not Latinos, but like African-American people, like, because this school is very diverse in a way, like people of color, and you know, so I think it united us more.
A lot of kids echo this idea, that the influx of newcomers has created a challenge, but Castlemont has risen to it. One student said that because the newcomers think of this place as a sanctuary, she appreciates it more too. She didn't realize how much she'd lost her motivation at school until she saw the newcomers fighting to be here.
But clearly, that's not the whole story for a lot of kids. Like Dominique from earlier, she didn't seem especially concerned for the newcomers. Before heading for class, she shrugged and said, "We have our own struggles here."
People be dying every day here.
That's not a huge exaggeration. Oakland has one of the highest murder rates in the country. Some people feel like the city just can't afford to take on another population's problems.
There's been a complicated response to the migrant crisis off the campus, too.
Back in 2014, when we first started hearing about an uptick of migrants crossing the border, the city of Oakland decided to do something to help. Later that year, the city council provided close to $600,000 to help pay for free legal services for unaccompanied minors. But eventually, there was a pushback.
The next year, when it came time to renew the funding, the money was cut in half, even though the number of people needing services had tripled.
Some people in Oakland felt that spending money on young migrants would mean taking funding away from other disadvantaged children.
But what about the children in Oakland who are exposed to violence, who are the victims of violence? You are not spending one copper penny on those children.
That's Oakland resident Asada Olukbala at a city council meeting back in 2015 when the second round of funding was up for deliberation. Oakland was unusual in the country in that it was using city money to fund legal services.
Nobody's spending the money you're spending, except you.
Olukbala feels like this is a federal issue. It shouldn't be dealt with on a city level.
Don't say that we're not trying to help these young kids. We're saying you didn't have to spend this money.
This is a delicate issue. It touches on tensions between Black and Brown communities in Oakland. It can feel like parts of the city get pitted against each other, fighting for limited resources. It's something that a lot of people brought up, but didn't want to talk about on tape.
And, you know, I don't want to get into the race thing, but it's real.
Oakland City Council member Noel Gallo co-sponsored the measure to fund legal aid. He's Latino, and so is a lot of his district, which includes Fruitvale.
There are seven other council people that are sitting here, and maybe based on my upbringing and who I am, don't have the same sensitivity because they're trying to address their community needs.
Asada Olukbala didn't want to talk to us on tape, but she did say, quote, communities should stick together. Gallo should look out for his people. But if he's going to ask for everyone else to pay for their needs, they should help us pay for those same needs in our community.
For Councilman Gallo, prioritizing problems is hard. On his office wall beside pictures of his daughters are headshots of every person killed on Oakland streets year by year.
The needs of Oakland are great. But, you know, the reality is the taxpayer is saying, you got to take care of my special needs before you try to take the world's needs, you know, deal with the world's needs. And so, and that's the political debate you have from the presidential people. You have it at the state level, and certainly you have it at the city level.
For his constituents, there's a lot that comes before immigrant needs.
And right now, one of the biggest criticisms I have from my residents, that are my voters that vote for me, that are my taxpayers, is, Noel, you got to fix up potholes in streets.
Right now, City Council is deliberating over putting up another $300,000 or so for legal aid. It's looking less and less likely to happen.
Oakland has poured in time and money to accommodate newcomers and their new lives here. Well, this effort might be moot if many of these kids are deported back to their home countries.
And for the ones without asylum, that's a real possibility. Central American migrants have become more vulnerable here in the U.S. President Obama made this particular population of immigrants a priority for removal. So more women and children have been deported during his term than during any other sitting president's.
Without a lawyer, these young people have a 1 in 10 chance of winning asylum. With one, the odds go up to 50-50.
And that's why the City Council's decision to fund legal aid has such high stakes, at least according to Eleni Wolfer-Bottas.
And I'm the immigration directing attorney at Centro Legal de la Raza in Fruitvale in Oakland.
Centro Legal trains and provides lawyers for free. The money allocated from City Council helps make that work possible. Without it,
the literal consequences are that we will have to let attorneys go and that less children will be able to be represented and children will be deported to countries where they have suffered extreme harm and likely will be killed. There have been reports that keep coming out and have come out continually that within 24 hours of children being deported, they've been murdered or they've been raped again. So not to be dramatic, but it really is life or death.
Wolfer-Bottas believes we have a moral obligation to protect these kids.
And the U.S. is implicated in what's going on in Central America, inextricably tied to the drug trade and the collapse of local government.
But at the simplest level, she just wants people to see
that these children belong to families that are Oakland residents. So the reason they don't choose to come here, they're released here because this is where they have ties, which means that this is part of the community and an extremely vulnerable part of the community.
The conditions in Central America aren't changing anytime soon. We don't really know how many kids are going to make the journey this coming year or how many of them are going to end up in Oakland schools. But we do know they'll come.
And the kids who've already made it here, this is their home. And while a lot of them live with the fear of being forced to leave, at least for today, they're safe.
In Oakland, I'm Liza Beal.
And I'm Hannah Kingsley-Ma for Cross Currents.
That was a special report from KALW News all about migrant youth living in Oakland. If you missed any of the show, head to KALW.org and click Cross Currents. It's all there. Our team includes Luisa Cardosa, Lila Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Meredith Hodnott, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Eli Wirtschafter, and Jordan Winter. Today's show is engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.